Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Central Coast Uncorked. This week we are taking you back to California and back to Tolosa. We are releasing the second half of the episode that we recorded at Tolosa in early May. So if you need a refresher, feel free to go back a couple episodes and listen to the first half. And then this one picks up where we left off and takes you through the rest of the single vineyard offerings that we tasted. So we hope that you enjoy the episode, and we'll see you again next week.
How's that one?
It's horrible. Don't eat it.
Okay.
Definitely gonna have a bite then.
I thought that was going to be like manchego, but that's really good. So how often do you guys do these like barrel tastings?
They're more or less by appointment, but throughout the week as guests come in, we will...
Somebody's never tasted wine out of a barrel and they just want to come up and try one. We'll bring them up there and...
Cool.
And, yeah, see if it right
that's really
barrel.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is very Pinot-y in the nose.
So this is from Solomon Hills.
Ooh, that is very Pinot-y.
Yeah. So I absolutely love the aromatics on this.
But it smells better than other Pinot-y Pinots.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that smell... I, like, don't know how to describe it.
It
I don't
smells,
know what it is about it that I'm like, that's a
it
Pinot.
It kind of smells like seaweed to me. Not the sea,
yeah.
Not ocean. Seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
Like
weed
that, kind
that
of,
smells
no,
like
no,
sea.
No, not. Well, no.
You see a weed in the ground?
You yeah, I'm like,
no,
I'm confused.
Like,
you
okay,
said
like,
not
so
the
like
ocean.
The ocean
right.
Has a smell.
Right, that's not a seaweed smell, though.
No, but like this, the seaweed that's been on shore, like after the seaweed cutters come through.
Oh, and then like all the flies
and it's like washed up from. Yeah, at that stage, like that's what this kind of smells like. It's a little bit salty, a little bit like. Am I into that? I don't know.
There's that initially, but then when you breathe in, there's something else.
Listen, I only know so many words.
Well, me too, obviously, because I can't describe it.
I think I like the last one better, though. I feel like the last one was easier drinking, which would make sense because it was first. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're definitely moving up the scale in weight, body, tannin, structure, all that good stuff. So,
Is the alcohol higher on this? Because I feel like... It might be higher.
So I don't know the finished alcohols
okay.
on any of these, and they'll still evolve as they're in barrel.
Mm-hmm.
But you know we've kind of just in general gone a bit lower in alcohol.
Okay.
A little higher in acidity, a little bit lower in alcohol for really all of the wines that Tolosa is making now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, kind of that more of that balanced approach to where.
Yeah.
You know, because acidity is one of those things in wine that it's going to allow it to age and kind of keep its vibrancy as it ages. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, if you have something that's got those like really overripe characteristics and kind of those tannins that have, you know, kind of gotten to that overripe point, you're going to lose that wine. It's going to fall apart. So a little bit more precision, a little bit more tension in these wines that do allow them to age.
So as the tasting goes on and the wines get like, not necessarily heavier, but more complex, maybe is a better term.
Mm-hmm.
Do they age better than, like, the one I would refer to as easy drinking?
So what do you mean?
Like, okay, so, like, we had the El Coro last, right?
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to me like a much milder,
approachable.
Easy drinking,
mm-hmm.
approachable wine, where this one is a little bit more, like, complex, a little bit more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And as that goes on, like, I imagine they get, usually tasting menus get more and more complex.
Mm-hmm.
So the more complexity it has, does it last longer? Like, is it gonna be better in 10 years than the El Coro?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
So, you know, talking about ageability in wines, I mean, you have complexity, which is one thing, and then you have structure, which is a completely different thing. So complexity is basically, like, all the different flavors and aromas that you're experiencing in the wine, you know, all the different kind of like layers that develop. You get your fruit, you get your primary fruit, you get your secondary fruit, then you get the layers of like, you know, earthy characteristics, and then like how does the oak fit into that, and what's the oak profile like, and how's that woven into the overall like flavor profile and aromatic profile of the wine. Then you have the structure, which is really going to kind of set the tone for how the wine ages. And structure is a combination of the tannin, the body, the acidity, the alcohol, and all of those factors. Like you're at the end of the day, you're really looking for a wine that's balanced and where there's no singular part of that structure that's really sticking out at you. Like nothing that's like, ooh, wow, wine was like way overly tannic, or oh my god, that wine was like way acidic. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at everything just kind of be like just really pleasing. And
yeah,
it's meant to, you know, go together. Like nothing's screaming at you. and that's kind of, you know, the signs that okay, this wine will age gracefully, because that complexity factor, like those fruits and stuff, those really like vibrant, bright fruits that you're getting right now, over time as the wine ages, those fruits are going to change from being like, you know, bright strawberries to like more of like potpourri and more like, you know, kind of dried and, you know, a little
yeah.
bit more herbaceous tones to them and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's a fun evolution to watch. But so I think for aging purposes, structure is the one thing that you're going to want to pay attention to the most.
So in your wine club,
mm-hmm.
do you guys have a schnitzel or not? This is like my go-to question.
Yeah.
Do you have like a chart that tells you when you think that wine should be enjoyed?
Uh-huh.
Good, because
yeah.
I say this every episode. Could somebody please start putting a best buy date on their wine? I get it for my tomatoes in a can. Why can't I have it for my wine? Like,
that's actually a great idea.
I know.
Trademark.
Because,
yeah.
like, okay, so I know a little bit about wine. Mostly I know what I like and what I don't like. I don't
Which
know.
Is a great starting point.
Yeah. I've learned a ton since we've been doing this. But, like, I have wine that I want to age, and I do, but then I'm like, well, I don't even know when to drink this, so I just drink it whenever I'm in the mood, which is working great for me,
mm-hmm.
but I just wish that I knew, this needs to be, like, I need to drink this before 2025,
yeah.
or I need to drink, you know, like, I just wish I knew, because that would be so helpful as, like, an ignorant consumer. To know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I can't be the only person that wishes this. So.
That's a great idea.
Whoever makes those decisions, let them know. They can send me some of this as a thank you for the wonderful idea.
Put a best buy date.
That's right.
Love it.
It wouldn't take up much space.
And for our sales team, what we'll do is we'll put a sell by date on there.
Yes.
There you go.
I do love it. Like, we went to a place in Arroyo Grande and they were selling an older wine, and they were like, drink it now. That's why we're selling it now. And I was like,
yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's
yeah.
very helpful. And I already drink it.
I can't find the second wine that I bought there. I don't know where I put it.
We got the rosé and that one red.
Yeah, I don't know where that red is. I drank the rosé already.
I did not drink the rosé, but I drank the red, and it was really good.
Yeah,
it made me want to go back and get more.
So, and now that we're into the mix of Pinots, I actually highly recommend that Petit Basque.
Okay.
There.
Okay.
Yeah.
Up next.
Some of these wines. Yeah. So what do you think of Solomon Hills?
I like it a lot.
I like it. So I don't, this might just be me and I might be crazy, but.
You are. For sure.
I find, so for example, on the Chardonnay, I found a lot of the acidity to be like in the front palate. And with this one in particular, I noticed it more like in the finish.
Okay.
And I don't know, like, if that's normal or how it's supposed to be, but it's just, I'm not great with, like, picking
I feel
out
in the back of my mouth.
Boysenberry in a wine, but I feel the structure and I feel the weight and, like, body of the wine
mm-hmm.
better.
I see what you're saying, though, like, picking up more of that acidity in the back
mm-hmm. Like, my mouth didn't start watering until after I swallowed, rather than, like, as I was drinking it.
Honestly, once you said the Chardonnay, my mouth started watering no matter what. So it doesn't even matter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, before we wrap up, too, let's try 2017. Pull out the one that's in bottles and see what that's like.
You can't have any of mine.
Okay, rude.
So,
I'll come visit. And
you won't be able to. It's actually still screwed shut, so you won't be able to get into it.
Okay, Kurt has lots of tools.
Yeah.
next night. I'm like, we're going to spend the night. And then, like, you're going to hear, like, a whirring sound of me trying to steal your wine.
I forgot to finish telling you about the article I read about only children, and they were actually saying that studies find that they're not weird. That's just like a social misconception.
They're definitely weird. I know a lot of only children, and they're definitely... You're a little bit weird. Come on.
I'm not...
You check off so many boxes in your stereotypes. Come on now. It's
true.
I think
all the boxes I check off are like positives, though. Like... really driven and like self-motivated, can entertain oneself, you know, like those are
I'm
all great
things. I'm not saying
it's
bad.
Yeah.
Listen, here's the thing, like me saying
weird isn't bad.
Something or someone is weird is not a bad thing. Usually I'm more into that. Like, look at my husband. Come on. I am not saying weird is bad, but only children are definitely have a predisposition to
being
weird.
Kurt is weirder than an only child.
But he's better at sharing. Well, maybe not.
Yeah.
He doesn't listen, so I can say whatever I want. He's a weirdo. No. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had a kid, I would only want one. Which is why I don't have a child. Because Kurt doesn't agree. But, like, I don't think it's bad to have a weird only child. But you might have a weird only child.
Nah, I'm not worried about it.
I think he'll be great.
I think he'll be fine.
And the thing is, like, usually I think with only children, like, the only thing that makes them weird is that they've never been exposed to the torture that is a sibling.
Right.
Like, Eric has tormented me. Mm-hmm. Not me, him. Him, me. For our entire life. And I love, he's my favorite. I love Axel, but, well, actually, Axel might be number one. But Eric's, like, in my top three favorite people in the world.
Would you rather go to the French Riviera with me or Eric?
That's
or
not
Axel?
Even the Axel. Duh. That's any time that's a choice, like, there's not even a competition. Peace out, you guys. Me and Axel are going to go have some fun. And that's not a fair question because Eric doesn't like anything that's there. So, of course, I don't want to go there with him.
He doesn't like wine.
That's not true. He does like wine. It gives him a headache.
Gotcha.
Like, everything gives him a headache.
I should say he doesn't drink wine.
So, it's interesting, though, like, as I...
Ooh, what's this,
as I expose
though?
Him to more wine, he likes more wine.
We'll get back to that. What's this? This is real good.
Apex.
Oh, see? You're an Apex.
Yeah. San Lucie Highlands.
That is delicious.
Yeah.
Ooh, a Magnum.
So, owned by the Franchione family, who've been farming in the Salinas Valley since the end of the 1800s. Goes back quite a ways in that valley. You know, San Lucie Highlands is one of those amazing appellations that gets, you know, just the right amount of sunshine, because it's all planted on the lower slopes of that mountain range. So you get this beautiful... you know, the nice soft morning and early afternoon sun, and then by the late afternoon when the sun can be a little harsh and the hottest part of the day, it dips back down behind the mountain range and the vineyards are shielded. But, you know, being so close to Monterey Bay, it pulls in all that coastal, you know, maritime influence as it gets hotter, like, you know, past Robles down valley, it tends to pull in all of that fog and those breezes. So.
That's delicious.
Yeah.
What is the futures price versus the release price? Is that what she pays versus what I pay?
More or less.
All right.
So as a Premier Solis member, you know, you're essentially buying into the program based on what you're tasting today. Like, you love these wines. You're like, yeah, I want to do this. So you buy them at the futures price. And then when we release the wines in November, first we give them to... you know, the premarital members, and then we release them to the public, and that's the point at which it becomes a release price.
I did not realize it was ever available to the public. Now, is it, but it's only available in a 3-pack ever?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
No, we'll release single bottles after the wines are released, so.
I love that it comes in the snazzy boxes. I put yarn in the boxes.
But this year, they did eco-friendly packaging, which is awesome. I was very excited about that.
So it was not in a box?
No, only the Primera ones came in the wood box.
Yeah.
Well, you got to pick. You could pick if you wanted it in the wood box.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're shipping, it's more friendly, mm-hmm. eco-friendly to do it in like a cardboard
box. I mean,
box.
I think that's great. Good job. But
I
love those boxes.
We have a lot of members who are like, dude, I got 20 boxes. What
for sure. That's why I have them, because she got sick of them.
Yeah. Because they're like, awesome. Then yeah, you can like find stuff to like put in them, like yarn or, you know.
Yarn fits great.
Whatever you want. But yeah, after a while, they kind of take up space.
Yeah, and it's not like you're going to... I imagine a lot of people don't have like a cellar that's perfect for stacking boxes.
Right. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
So it's like they serve their purpose for like the, you know, the first vintage that you get them, but you know, I mean, it's certainly an option we have if you love boxes. And,
plus, it's
you know.
Great advertising. Like, I have my yarn out in my living room, and that people are like, "Oh,
yeah,
where'd you get that?" I'm like, I tell my friends, "You're never gonna buy that. Don't worry about it. Just don't.
Yeah.
I'll get you a box."
Love it. Yeah, see, I keep all my old wine corks.
Mm-hmm.
My wine boxes.
I had to stop collecting wine corks because
it
got embarrassing.
The same thing.
Yeah, I also Colina collects them and like partners with somebody who makes shoes or makes something with them.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was like, oh, I could give them my corks, but I still have to store them until then. So I was like,
yeah,
this is sorry, guys. I did get to see cork trees. When I was in Corsica, which I had never seen and I didn't know very much about, and they kind of broke down to us like how they use them, and it was really interesting, and it was crazy to see the bark that was so thick.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really neat. That was one good thing I enjoyed on that island.
You didn't like Corsica?
I didn't love that island. I really didn't. Like,
why didn't you like it?
I don't know. The thing is, I would go back. Because I feel like there's the ocean, the Mediterranean, right? With, like, sandy beaches and everything you think of when you think of the Mediterranean. And then they're like, oh, wait, a 2 hours drive? Like, I can go snowboarding. I'm never going to go snowboarding. But there's snow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very dramatic.
Yeah.
And the only way to get back and forth from this island is on a ferry or to fly. So it's pretty remote, and it's kept its own culture because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it was neat to see, and there's nothing, so it's fairly relaxing, but,
yeah.
Like, the little bit that I saw of it seemed, like, kind of harsh.
Okay. How long were you stopped off there?
Just a day.
Okay.
So, we went to two wineries.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So, Corsica, like, Vermentino, out there?
I don't know.
Yeah,
what kind of wine did you taste?
I don't know. I really don't.
You got wine there.
I did.
So what kind of wine did you get?
I don't remember. I got a white and a red from this winery that was super old. They were like your stereotypical Corsica... I don't know what the...
Corsicese?
Something like that. Winery. You saw their vineyards. I have pictures, which I will show you. They had these awesome... like high ceiling with like two levels,
mm-hmm.
not super, like not like you wouldn't want to live in a floor that low, but definitely two levels, concrete tanks. And they started the wine at the top, and then it like everything settled and they did whatever. I've seen concrete tanks, but I've never seen them that big.
Yeah. You were talking about this the other day. Yeah.
Well, that was the terracotta. Same winery though.
Got it.
So that place was really cool and I loved it. And I bought wine from them. I bought at least two bottles, if not three. I bought two whites and a red. And I can't believe the prices. It was like 35 euros or something for that. Like, it was so cheap. And then we went to this other winery, which was kind of cool, but the owner was a little harsh, which I think is typical for the island. Like, I think it's just kind of an aggressive people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be to live in those conditions. And it's her and her daughters, so I was like, oh, sweet, like, girl power, winery. But everything was mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
They harvested, was all machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything they did was machine, so they kind of, like, lost me at some of that just from being here and, like, hearing how aggressive it can be towards the plants and stuff. And their wines were very sweet. So I did not buy any of their wines because I knew I had limited space.
Yeah. But, interesting.
Yes.
It's the most I've heard about your trip so far.
Sorry.
Which one is this one?
So let's get first impressions. What do we think here?
So this smells a little bit more like fruity to me. Mm-hmm. A little bit more like fruity.
I'm going to guess Hollister. And I have no reason for that guess other than that it kind of tastes like Hollister to me.
Okay.
But where are you thinking Hollister?
I don't know. I've only been there a couple times.
Right.
About it, this is what... I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying it's my guess.
Well, I'm saying you're right.
Ha! But, I was right! That's the second time in my life.
Right, but not because...
Doesn't matter. I got it right. It doesn't matter why I got it. All that matters is I got it right.
So this Hollister is actually one of our vineyards here in Edna Valley.
Okay, I did not get it right. Not even a little
That's
bit.
That's what I was
I
saying.
I take it back. Yeah. I'm very
like, it
you,
tastes like Hollister.
You misled me.
I already knew that the Hollister Vineyard was not in Hollister.
Yeah. Now I'm disappointed, but it's still oddly satisfied.
Named after the same guy, though.
I didn't know Hollister was named after a guy, so it's not. Appreciate the help, but no.
But anyway, so we have this cool little block. Down Valley. That's actually, Hollister's probably our vineyard that's the closest to the coast. So here's a map of our estate vineyard here. Vineyards.
Okay.
So we're up here at the Monteghetti property, surrounded by all Pinot Noir. And then as you head down 227, if you were to go out to like Kinsey and Center of Effort,
mm-hmm.
you pass right by these two blocks here, 577, 579. 579 is home to this Pinot Noir.
Who names the blocks?
Who names the blocks or names the vineyards?
Blocks.
Like,
who gives them the number? Do you guys give them a number?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yeah.
It's not
yeah,
like...
Yeah, we assign a number.
Okay.
Yeah, just so we can keep them all straight. But the vineyard names are all after the old owners of this vineyard, with the exception of Salal, which is named after one of our founding fathers. Bob Shee will have it named after his daughters. Sarah, Laura, and Allison.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know why I want to roll my eyes at that a little bit, but I do. It's cute, but it's still, I'm like, okay. Probably just jealousy. I'm still bitter about having the Hollister right, but wrong.
You just want a wine named after you. Is the thing.
So bad. Come on, man. That's very, very good, though.
Yeah.
That one might have knocked El Coro out of
okay.
my favorites. Although Apex was good.
It was very
good, too.
Delicious.
Gosh, how do you choose?
So with Hollister, super interesting, or fun facts about Hollister. So like I said, it's one of our closest to the coast. Price Canyon is right here. So you get a lot of that. And probably on a day like today, you can look down valley and see a lot of that coastal influence creeping in from Pismo. But the vineyard site itself is super unique. Sits up on top of this little hill, and there's three pretty distinct soil types that exist in that one block. So up on top, you have this like super chalky, super pliable limestone. It's great for retaining acidity. I mean, it retains acidity in the grapes, but very poor at retaining water. I mean, the vines up at the top of that slope really struggle. A little bit further down the slope, you have this kind of transitional soil between limestone and sand. And then you get to the bottom of the slope, and it's literally like walking the beach. It's like this silty sand. It's crazy. So this wine, with the grapes during harvest, we picked the vineyard three different times just because they all the
That's kind
of
cool.
Parts of the block ripen.
So you pick them at different times, but it's all the same, like it goes into the same bottle?
Yeah.
That's cool. I've never heard of that.
Mm-mm. Yeah, just pick them at different times based on what
I mean,
they're
it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. But I've just never, maybe no one's ever taken the time to explain that to me.
Could be. That's where complexity comes into it. So you
see?
Have this beautiful wine that's like incredibly complex because of those three distinct different soil types, because soil has a huge bearing on, you know, what your wine's ultimately going to taste like.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's... over 60 different soil types that have been identified
Really?
Edna Valley.
Yeah, so just in Edna Valley. My goodness. Mm-hmm. Why? Like, where did all that come from? Does anybody know? Or so just volcanic ash or something?
It's a combination of volcanic. Well, so the three main types are volcanic, clay, and then you get limestone. So limestone's from basically tectonic uplifting of the plates, exposing elevated seabeds. Volcanic is obviously from, you know, our volcanic mountain chain that goes down towards Morro Bay. And then clay, just as, you know,
yeah, that makes sense.
Just eroded down valley over time.
That.
Yeah. And you have different variations of those.
I've paid that much attention to soil, but
it's really cool, actually. If you're drive down Orchid Road, it's super cool to see. As you get over to like this Paletti Vineyard here, you got Chamisal's winemaking and the Malian scene over on your right hand side. If you look on the left, which is where our vineyard is, you're driving along and you're on kind of like valley floor, and you see this drastic shift from this like dark brown soil to a, you know, light, almost like bright white soil. Just
I'll have to pay attention because I drive that road every time I go to her house.
Yeah.
But I've never looked at the dirt.
Yeah.
So I will. Well, next time my husband's driving, I will.
Well, there's a big push too to put like ingredients on wine labels too.
I have to say, since starting this and researching and learning a little bit more about wine, I kind of would like that to happen too. Expiration date, then ingredients in my mind, but I would kind of, not that I would know what any of the ingredients are, but I would appreciate it.
Well, I think it's interesting because like a lot of times people think, oh, it's wine, so it must be vegan or vegetarian, but that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, that wasn't something I learned.
Yeah, which I did know that, but I didn't realize that like the vast majority of wine is not vegan or vegetarian.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of like finding and filtration agents that people use that are derivatives of animals that help, you know, bind with proteins or attach onto something that, you know, leaches out of, leaches certain particulates out of solution, like finding with egg whites or using isinglass, which is a dried sturgeon bladder, to, you know, help. Basically, it's a clarifying agent.
That's not as concerning to me. I would like to know more, like, about, like, what chemicals are in wine, or I think that's why it's important to me. I think that's why it's important to me to know about,
I just learned that was a
about
thing
how like the vineyards are managed, because like I, when I go to the grocery store, right, I'm like, okay, organic fruit, organic produce, like all of those things. And if I'm not going to be consistent about that, like I drink a lot of wine, so if I'm not going to be consistent about what I put into my body,
that would be a little crazy. Like I see organic wine and I'm like, probably not. And not that that's fair. I don't know why I think that. Maybe it's
because
they
probably because like natural wine has like gotten a bad rap.
I don't even know that. Like I don't even know if I've ever tasted it to know for sure. Honestly, if I'm being perfectly honest, it's just like, oh, every other part of my diet, yes, I want everything organic, but like this, no, it's that doesn't sound good. I want it to taste good. Yeah. Well, I don't. It's not appropriate or accurate. I don't know.
Yeah,
sorry, organic people. I know you're putting so much work into the wine, but I'm just gonna diss it.
No, but I mean, there's a lot of producers that do practice, you know, organic or biodynamic agriculture, and you know, part of the whole SIP certified protocol is, you know, it's you're trying to be sustainable. You're trying to do things that are, you know, healthy for the whole ecology of, you know, the vineyard, the, you know, the grasses, the greater area is that, you know, I mean, we're right here, we're in Endo Valley, we're
you guys have like
a
pretty driveway too, like you see everything you want to,
right, but like also close to town, like, you know, we don't want to spray chemicals that are going to be hazardous to,
right,
you know,
thank you,
to people in town.
My nephew's very close. don't kill him with chemicals.
But you know, there's the other side of that, that's the economic side of
being SIP certified, which is like if you have a serious problem in your vineyard and there's only really one way to eradicate that, mm-hmm. are you as the winery going to take the huge financial loss of not being able to like save your vineyard because yeah. you're practicing, you know, organic or biodynamic or, you know, whatever agriculture, or right. are you going to, you know, get in there, take care of the problem. So that
would be
you can
a really hard decision,
plan,
yeah.
right?
It is. Because
it is a business.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions. I just have to drink it.
Yep. So, last but certainly not least, I actually poured this one out of order. I would have traditionally thrown this in the mix, but, you know, because this is our flagship wine, Fermera, and we do pour in a really fancy glass. I thought we'd save it for last. But really, the idea behind Primera is we're kind of assembling a wine to represent the best of what Edna Valley is all about. You know, as you can see from the map here, we farm several different Pinot Noir vineyards throughout the area. Knowing where Pinot really excels in this region, and really showcases the best of, you know, what these different vineyard sites are all about. You know, we identify those blocks and we harvest them. We, you know, we harvest them with the mindset that, like, yeah, this is probably going to go into Primera. Wine goes through its initial fermentation. It goes through secondary malolactic fermentation. Ages in barrel for a little bit. Winemaker goes back through, takes all those lots that we thought were going to end up in Primera, and call that selection down even more, so that really this is the best expression of Edna Valley. And not, you know, not in the sense that it's supposed to be like the most robust or biggest like wow factor, but it's supposed to be, you know, just a beautiful, beautiful expression of the place and what, you know, what we feel world-class Pinot Noir is from here.
Cool. Smells good.
I already tasted it.
Peanutty.
I like it.
Cheater.
So.
Jumped the gun on you.
Yeah.
I like it, but not as much as the Apex and the Hollister.
Okay.
But it's a little sharper, if that's a descriptive word.
Well, that goes back to the conversation, too, about, you know, how stylistically, you know, we're making these wines, and that sharpness that you're getting is, you know, Primera's made to age. Like, you know, this is a wine that will easily lay down for 10, 15, 20 years. That's not something you think about with Pinot. You know, just being a thinner skin variety, and being, you know, typically drink Pinot's younger, but, like, you know, we want to build a legacy around this wine.
I could see that, because, like, I still feel it. It's been a bit since I tasted it, and I still feel it. And usually when that's the case, people tell me to age it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, Primera's going to be beautiful. Like, 5-10 years from now, that wine is going to be on point.
I mean, it's not off point.
It's not. It's definitely not.
Still good.
Still
yeah.
delicious.
It's beautiful right now, beautiful right out of the gate, but, like, give it some time to age and really express its true colors. We did a wine dinner last night up at Il Cortile in Paso Robles with.
What? You've betrayed me, sister.
I didn't
totally,
hear about it.
Well, and I totally misspoke too, because it wasn't Il Cortile. It was La Cosecha.
Oh,
there are three sister restaurants. Yeah.
But never mind.
I'm not gonna lie though. I feel less offended that I wasn't there.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Thanks for rubbing that in. It was nice.
So we brought our Spanish wines.
Mm.
And
we have to talk about that.
Did a wine pairing dinner. And so we opened those wines about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, aggressively decanted them multiple times over.
What does aggressive mean?
So, I mean, just
pouring
okay.
back and forth.
Okay.
Pouring back
okay.
and forth. I mean, just getting as much aeration, much agitation in that wine as we could, just to, like, it gives much oxygen into it.
Because it needs
it. Because it needs it. And those wines were showing like I've never experienced them before. They were stunning. And, I mean, the food component of it was,
I'm
like,
real
was like
really upset right now. I'm
level,
not,
but
this conversation's not making me happy. I feel so salty right now.
But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we make these wines, we put them in a bottle, we release them. And it's like, you know, part of this program is to like do them justice by selling them in a 3-pack so that you have multiples of them.
Yeah.
And you can age them. You can
I think that's really cool. Because I do often wish I had bought 2 of something or 3 of something for that reason. Like, I want to drink one now.
Yeah.
I want to try one in a couple years. Like...